This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for December 22nd, 2005. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate put a bow on its ag appropriations bill, and generally speaking, it's not friendly to agriculture. Also, hopes of exploring for oil in Anwar yesterday held up the defense bill, and just how soon might beef trade resume with South Korea? I'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason gets a toy tractor for Christmas, one with a radio on the back fender. All that on the Thursday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Thursday afternoon, prices settled like this. Kansas City wheat, 376, up 4.5. March wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 330 and 3/4, up 3.25. May, 340 and a quarter, up 3.25. March corn, 212 and 3/4, up 2.75. May, 221 and a half, up 2.5. July, 229 and 3/4, up 2. September, 237 and a half, up 1.75. January soybeans, 613 and a half, up 7. March, 625 and a half, up 6.5. July, 640 and a half, up 7. November, 639, up 5.5. January soybean meal, 203.60, up 2.70. January soybean oil, 21.40, up 18. At the Merck, January feeders, 113.60, down 47.5. December live cattle, 94.77 and a half, down 72.5. February lean hogs finished the day where they started, at 65.27 1/2.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dale Durkholz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon, Dale.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Want to start over on the Merck side because we do have a cattle on feed report due out tomorrow. And that placed in November has everybody's attention at 114.6. I imagine a lot of that has been factored into the trade already. But if we come up with a number larger than that, what are the implications for next week?
Well, you know, you got some people on there that there are a few people thinking up at 19 and 20, better than 20% on placement jumps during the month of November. And, you know, it's not just going to be the placement number itself that people are going to focus on. It's also going to be the weight breakdown within that placement number itself to try to get some kind of a gauge on when these animals might be headed to the slaughter lines, you know. You go back into November itself, and you know, we already had the talk at that point about the possibility the Japanese market might get opened up by the end of the year. So the game you run here is that people might have tended to place heavier weight animals to try to target animals coming out of the lots here in the very first part of 2006. And if the numbers are up above the expectation, and if the weights are on the heavy side, it's certainly going to be a bit of a bear factor. Or could be.
Over at the Chicago Board of Trade, don't know if the volumes were heavy or not, but we took another step toward technical good health today, it looks like.
Yeah, we really did. The beans, we came out in here, the January contract anyway, and posted a new high close on that particular contract, and actually closed it above a small interim high we had back in mid-October. So that looks good. You combine that with the fact that yesterday on the break early on in the day, we went down, tested the 100-day moving average, and we've since turned up, says that, you know, technically we still got a market that's pointed to higher prices, at least in the short term. Then in the corn, actually today the March contract leaped out and actually closed at a new high here again, and closed above a high we had just a couple of days ago. So that's going to keep the short-term trend arrow anyway pointed upward. We've got in corn a 100-day moving average. It comes in about 218. And if we look at a continuation chart, there's an old gap we left last summer at 214.5 to 217.5. So we got some things over the market we might struggle with.
And in the soybeans, there's a gap around, I don't know, the 630s, and then there's another one up at 644. You think we'll fill either of those gaps?
I think we're at least going to try to test this one, and it's at 632.5 to 34.5. I think we're going to test that one anyway. Whether we fill it or not, it's still going to be a question mark. I think the odds kind of tilt a little bit to the direction of yes, and we may go ahead and try to trace out a run that carries all the way in somewhere just shy of 650. But, you know, in a game like this where it's somewhat lower volume, you always play the game a little bit carefully in these markets, too, and especially during the holidays. Lots of history in here about getting false signals.
So what advice do you have for folks needing to make cash sales now and as well as hedgers for 2006?
Well, I still think, and you know, we're basically on the bias that you know, we're going to see some more strength here in the short term. I think it's going to be important on this rally we've got in place here, if we can edge out this thing a little bit higher, which I think we can, and producers make sure and get some cash flow sales made at least, and I think enough to cover your needs of what you're going to have for the next 60 days. Longer term, we tend to have the bias that, you know, we're laying the groundwork for some better markets down the road. But, you know, it points and puts you in a situation here where it may be as far as getting all the way into the spring months before we can really see much fruit to the potential of this. So, you know, there are a lot of question marks when you look long haul. Some people ask us about new crop, and, yeah, we make some limited new crop sales. We got some orders out there to do some light selling as far as new crops concerned, up about 2.5 December corn and around 6.5 November beans, but I wouldn't jump feet first at that either.
Do you like the idea of maybe purchasing some corn calls?
I do, but I think it's too soon. I think there's going to be a better opportunity when we get into what one of my clients calls the John Deere break. In other words, out there somewhere around in February, and if the price cycle counts stay with us, we ought to have another 10-week low out there. So I think a person can put that off until we get somewhere out into that time frame. I wouldn't really worry too much about it here yet today.
Let's go ahead and look at the wheat. The March, of course, settling the day 330 and three quarters, that up 3.25. Looks like the funds did liquidate a few more of those short positions.
Yeah, we actually took the March contract up over the 50-day moving average here today, and, you know, that kind of puts in a position. It doesn't have to go too awfully far to get to the 100-day moving average up around 336, but, you know, it kind of looks like wheat's positioning itself, when you look at the action we've had in place here, of going ahead and seeing some more come down to pike here yet. But I think once we get upwards of psychologically, let's say somewhere around 3.5, and, you know, the September highs were in the 350s, and we had one back there in July that was in the low 350s. I think any time we get close to 350 that the market's going to have difficulty advancing.
What do you think about the 35.25 spread between Kansas City March, Chicago March, with the premium to Kansas City?
Well, you know, when you look at the wheat market, everybody understands that, you know, fundamentally, you know, hard wheat had a better fundamental structure than the soft wheat did. And actually, when you go out into the hard wheat market, funds have been long that market versus in Chicago. That's dominantly a soft wheat market. They've been short in that because those kind of trends have been in place. I think the spread itself probably about as far as it's going to be able to move at this point, but I think for the spread to narrow in a whole lot, we probably have to finally get the funds in a position to want to start liquidating some of these shorts they have in Chicago. We may not be far from that at this point, so I think the spread's about as wide as it's going to get, but I don't know that it's going to narrow a whole lot unless funds bail out. And then if they do, it'll probably be a short-term play initially.
Before I let you go, give us your analysis of the cash grain basis market and whether or not you think it's going to get a little bit more sloppy in the next week or two.
I don't think it's going to get real sloppy just yet. During the holidays is not necessarily a notorious time for getting sales made, but once we cross that into the new calendar year itself, and if we still have some strength in place in the future, then I think we're probably going to see producer sales start to pick up just a little bit, and they'll become more sensitive after the holidays to cash flow needs. So I think we could probably start to ease some after we get by that January 1 holiday.
Thanks much, Dale.
Have a good day.
You too. Dale Dirkholtz of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, Mark Russo from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will be joining us with a look at the agricultural weather, taking a look at AM 580 meteorologist Jay Searle's forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight, partly to mostly cloudy and mild. Lows ranging from 24 in northeastern Indiana to 40 in southwestern Illinois. Then tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy, but warm and windy. Highs in the 40s for the north and mid-50s in southern Illinois. In agricultural news, the Senate was unsuccessful in an attempt to shut down a filibuster against the defense spending bill yesterday. A pair of Republicans joined Democrats in opposing a provision to allow oil exploration in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. So the Senate fell short of the 60 votes needed to end debate on the bill. National Corn Growers Association Energy Advisor Samantha Slater says there's implications for agriculture.
There was nothing in the energy bill that was signed in August that would have increased domestic supply of natural gas, with the exception of the provision that would streamline liquefied natural gas siting. So what we've been working on since August, and continuing to work on, I should say, is opening up for exploration and production both the ANWR and the Outer Continental Shelf.
New Mexico GOP Senator Pete Domenici, a champion of opening ANWR to exploration and drilling, says the Senate's failure to invoke closure on the defense spending bill does not mean he's giving up. Domenici says he'll renew his efforts on the issue next year in the fiscal 2007 budget process because, and these are his words, the issue is too important to our consumers and our economy to accept defeat. Ann Slater argues Senate approval of ANWR would have sent a signal to Wall Street that Congress is willing to open up new areas to exploration and production.
So until you get that vote, it's not going to have any impact, unfortunately, in fertilizer prices and natural gas prices for the upcoming spring planting season.
The nearly $500 billion defense measure also includes $29 billion in disaster assistance for victims of Hurricane Katrina, but no money to help any U.S. farmers. Sherman Reese is president of the National Association of Wheat Growers. He says it looks like ag producers will not get any help from the federal government this year because the defense spending bill was the last chance for Congress to include ag disaster aid.
We had hoped that we would be able to have some sort of relief package attached to one of the remaining appropriations bills. Didn't make it out of conference, and so we are basically left with nothing. The last bill in town is the Department of Defense bill, as you're aware of. And from our standpoint, we're really left with no legislative vehicle to push that at this point.
But the Senate did approve a budget reconciliation bill yesterday that cuts $2.7 billion in federal farm spending over the next 5 years. The bill also extends the milk income loss program and restores a 2.5% cut in that program initially proposed by the Senate. But just like the defense bill, the appropriations measure contains no emergency disaster assistance for Midwest farmers. Wisconsin Farmers Union President Sue Beitlich.
You know, Farmers Union wasn't wanting any cuts to agricultural spending, and that's the part that's hard. There was no weather-related disaster assistance for crop and livestock losses.
Final action on the measure was held up over a point of order unrelated to agriculture that required it to be sent back to the House. The House is unlikely to complete work on the measure until late January. Meanwhile, Montana Senator Max Baucus has proposed a bill that would provide additional money to producers due to high energy prices. Under his proposal, farmers who grow program crops would see their direct payments for 2005 crops doubled as a way to help mitigate the effects of rising input costs, including those for energy and fertilizer. Program crops include barley, corn, oats, peanuts, rice, sorghum, soybeans, and other oil seeds, upland cotton, and wheat. A delegation of U.S. officials currently is holding talks with a government in Seoul, South Korea, on reopening that country's market to U.S. beef. However, even if the talks go well for the U.S., the ban may still be in place for a while. A South Korean agriculture ministry official says formal talks will not begin until 2006, and it's premature to guess when U.S. beef imports will restart. Meanwhile, RCAF USA is mad that the U.S. is now accepting Japanese beef imports. A statement issued yesterday condemns a new USDA rule allowing imports of boneless beef from Japanese cattle of all ages from a country with a much higher rate of mad cow disease than that of the U.S. At the moment, a Japanese trade delegation is in the U.S. inspecting BSE safeguards. Martin O'Connor is chief of the USDA Ag Marketing Service Standardization Branch.
In order to gain access back into the market, there were specific requirements that were needed to be met by the production programs in the United States to regain the access into the market. So USDA developed these protocols in conjunction with the government of Japan officials in order to assure the consumers in Japan that there are safeguards in place to provide the assurances to them that the beef coming from the U.S. meets their expectations.
And according to O'Connor, the Japanese technical team's results have yet to be disclosed.
We can't really talk to that point right now. If this is this team here is coming to take an overview of the whole system process in place and not necessarily any specific plant location or any specific activity. So they're looking at the program in a broad perspective, although they're being very detailed in their analysis. And once they return to Tokyo, they will make an evaluation from an overall perspective, because this team here in Kansas is one of two teams that are presently in the United States looking at the product.
The head of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, Philip Tseng, today says he expects U.S. producers to export 100,000 metric tons of beef to Japan next year. That's a third of what they sold before a 2003 ban due to BSE. A federal court has ruled that Nebraska's 23-year-old ban on corporate farming is unconstitutional. U.S. District Judge Lori Smith Camp found that the law violates the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act. The argument against the ban was that it caused loss of income for producers because it prevents them from contracting with out-of-state corporations for raising and feeding livestock. The plaintiffs also argued that the ban reduces the value of their land and stock in the Family Farm Corporation by barring potential purchasers. The Nebraska ruling comes 2 years after a federal appeals court struck down a similar ban on corporate farming in South Dakota that had been in place since 1998. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. This Christmas, farm boys all over the nation will be waiting not so patiently for Santa to bring them a tractor just like their dads. As Todd Gleason reports, if they're lucky, it will be American-made from Dyersville, Iowa, the home of Joseph Ertl, toy maker.
What I won from Santa this year is a toy tractor. Well, Santa actually already brought it to me. He made it himself. It's a Meadow Green Oliver, 1955. Trimmed in clover white with orange and black to set it off. And this little toy tractor is the first model he's ever made with a radio mounted right there on the fender. It's just like the one I clung to as a little boy when Dad and I went to the field. My Santa is Joe Ertl of Dyersville, Iowa. For 50 years, the company his dad founded has made the dreams of little and big farm boys come true.
Now I'm only 5 years old, I've got to do just what I'm told, 'cause Santa Claus is going to be dropping in on me.
Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, WGN U.S. Farm Report, Chicago. Every kid loves a tractor. There's no doubt in my mind, boys love tractors. And as we get a little bit older, some of us who grew up on those tractors think back to those days. I mean, when I look at my Farmall Super M or the Super H, I think about days of sitting in that tractor, bringing in a load of corn when I was a little boy, and coming in on a chilly October night with that moon coming up over the corn stalks. Or I think about cultivating corn down to the Wabash Bottoms. I was on one tractor and Dad was on another. You know, there's just something very, very special, especially if it's a tractor that Dad had. You know, there's an emotion that gets wrapped up in that.
It is an emotion that Max Armstrong knows all too well, and one that has made Joseph Ertl's toy tractors worth a lot of money. At this auction in November, to benefit scholarships for future farm broadcasters, Max spent $300 on a 1/8-inch scale Farmall MD. It's special for many reasons.
That's an M diesel, and this one is special because it's a 50th anniversary tractor. On the frame of that tractor are raised letters pointing out that it's the 50th year of toy making for Joseph Ertl, the legendary toy maker who owns Scale Model Toys.
Would you like me to put anything up here on your name or anything?
Joe Ertl is a celebrity in his own right, and for years his autograph has been sought after. Like Santa, he gives it freely.
Can you write, "Thanks for support of farm broadcasting"?
I'll date it there for you, too.
You've done this before.
Yeah, a few thousand times.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
your
help.
You're welcome. Thank you for supporting.
Well, it started way back in 1945 when my father was on strike at a local foundry, and he started making castings in his basement. And one day he made a farm toy, and I was 10 years old at the time. And at that time, the toy tractor sold so well, he never went back to his job again. And of course, I grew up with the business. And then when I was in my senior year of high school, I started taking drafting courses. And we went from sand casting to die casting, and we had to have drawings. So I started making the drawings for the toys, and I've been designing them ever since.
Today, Joe Ertl's company is called Scale Models, and he still loves to design and make toy tractors, in large part, he says, because the farm community has welcomed him into its vast family called agriculture.
It's been a pleasure for me to work my whole life here in the designing of these toys, which have made so many people happy. You know, the farmers have really been great to our family, and I can't think of anything more wholesome than little toy tractor and to be a pretend a farmer. It's so much better than some of these toys I've seen made over the year, and it's been a pleasure for me to be associated with the farmers and the farming industry and everything. It's just been a wonderful life.
What's that?
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
If you're lucky, what you'll find under your Christmas tree this year is a toy tractor made by Joseph Ertl in Dyersville, Iowa. That's what's on the top of my list. Well, by the way, thanks in advance, Santa. Your friend, Todd Gleason at the University of Illinois.
Well, could there be something I might have missed? I had quite a few things on my list. I hope he can fit it all under that Christmas tree. Hope he can fit it all under my Christmas tree. Let's see, I know he can fit the airplane under there, and he can get that bicycle in there, and the gumball machine, and I don't know what he's gonna do with that horse.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The regional school superintendent for Champaign and Ford Counties says she's encouraged by initial details of a state proposal to help smaller school districts consolidate. Judy Pacey says the suggested changes to Illinois law would allow individual districts to decide what's best for them. Republican Rex Bradfield of Urbana filed petitions this week to run for the 103rd Illinois House District seat. That makes him the sole GOP competitor, the Democratic incumbent lawmaker Naomi Jacobson. Bradfield is a surveyor and political newcomer who says he'll focus on state pension fund reform and opposing the all-kids child health insurance plan. Congressman Tim Johnson of Urbana says it may be time for Congress to boost fuel efficiency standards for new vehicles. Johnson is cited in a report from the Public Interest Research Group. The report says consumers could have saved about $9 billion and the country would have used 500 million fewer barrels of oil had fuel efficiency standards been tightened 4 years ago. Chicago area Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. says a federal measure that affects plans for an airport in Piatone is unprecedented because it calls for federal oversight to what he says is a local project. Jackson says Governor Blagojevich should challenge the measure, which was approved last night. The Blagojevich administration says it will review the measure. Maytag shareholders have approved the company's sale to Whirlpool, the nation's largest appliance maker. In Illinois, Maytag has about 1,100 workers at a plant in Herron, about 10 miles northeast of Carbondale. It closed a plant in Galesburg last year. Indiana's two-month tax amnesty program netted $255 million in delinquent taxes or commitments to pay. Governor Daniels says that far surpasses the $65 million lawmakers had counted on in the current state budget. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on AM 580. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now with a look at today's agricultural weather is Mark Russell of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Thank you for filling in, and a happy holiday to you.
Well, same to you and all the listeners.
Well, I'm kind of checking out southern Brazil and seeing if it's going to be naughty or nice. I know they're going to get a little rain this weekend, but then dry after that?
Well, we see here some rain development here, mainly into tomorrow and on into early Saturday across southern Brazil as this frontal boundary now in Argentina pushes up northward into southern Brazil. And actually, it looks like the focus of rain with that front will be across extreme northern Argentina and then up into southern Brazil. So some of those areas there of Rio Grande do Sul, Santa Catarina, which have missed out on some rains here over the past week or 10 days. Looks like a really good opportunity for rain here coming up over the next 48 hours. Now, beyond that, looks like a couple days of dry weather, but we do see more rain around the middle portion of next week when another frontal boundary pushes up into that region.
I think traders at the Chicago Board of Trade were waffling back and forth today on uncertainties. Will it or won't it? Will it rain? Won't it rain? And I guess more important, will there be net drying or not?
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with this computer model guidance run-to-run inconsistency, which is actually not that unusual considering this is computer output, and it's not going to be right at times. And it seems like that inconsistency has been pretty extreme here over the past several days, and some of the U.S. model output here has put in some rains in Argentina and some of the Brazils, and they take it out, and the next run put some more rains in, and then the subsequent runs take it out. We've had a lot of variability. And for those people that really rely on the computer model guidance there, or at least think that that's exactly what's going to happen, which obviously is not the case, then that's why we've seen a lot of this kind of upwards and downwards movement here. But what we like to do here is kind of take a step back here from the computer model guidance. And, computers don't tell you everything. And in our opinion here, with the way that the setup is coming up here, we think that there will be opportunities for rainfall both in Argentina and southern Brazil. And by month's end, we will see improvement here with some of those dry areas.
Meanwhile, back here in the States, especially here in the Midwest, no white Christmas in sight. In fact, it's going to be pretty doggone warm, comparatively speaking.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of a Christmas gift from Mother Nature, considering the cold pattern of what we've seen here, which is pretty extreme. We do have kind of one chance here, at least for the northern portions of Illinois, like, for example, here in Chicago. There's an outside chance here we might see an inch or two of snow with this storm system that's going to be pushing through on later on Christmas Eve. Most of it looks to be rain, but possibly change over to snow at the end. So if you live up north, your potential is higher than if you are down south, but that is really our only opportunity.
Thanks much, Mark.
Mm-hmm. My pleasure, and happy holidays.
You too. Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:49 Central Time for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening Commodity Market Report. This is Dave Dickey.